And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3744 of the Survival Podcast. I got a good one for you today. We are going to have a guest on in just a moment, and we're going to be talking about, as you saw from the title, building a career, building a profession, and doing it without college from the angle of trades. Now, my guest, David Feeney, he is an electrical apprentice, but I think this is much broader than, like, that's his path. There's a lot of trades like this. I was just talking to Dave right before we went live about a new project, over a quarter million square feet being put in downtown Fort Worth. That's one job. That's one job. Another friend of mine named David, it just recently wrapped up project managing and building the entire Tesla facility down in Austin, and then went on to help start building the Samsung facility. Those two projects are acres and acres under roof, and all of that has different systems that need to be installed, plumbing systems, electrical systems, pipe fitting work that needs to be done, all steel work, right? There's so much work out there, and we are entering, I believe, a huge building phase in America. It doesn't necessarily mean all our problems are going to go away, but we're building new things. The amount of data centers that we're going to be building, the amount of electrical infrastructure to build, there's a demand for this that simply there's not enough labor to perform right now that is the training and the skill. The good news is instead of paying, you know, $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year to go learn something that you never actually do anything like you do in college, and I'm not saying college sucks for everybody, but for a lot of people, that's what it ends up being. You can actually be paid to learn in these in-demand trades. And I think this is a much better path for many young people right now in America. And I think this works for male and female alike, but especially young men. Young men tend to get bored sitting behind a desk all day long. They don't really want to do that. They want to go out and do something meaningful and impactful. They like to work with their hands. They like to be physically challenged, at least on some level. This type of work does that. We'll be talking with David in just a minute about that. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Above Phone. You can take back your privacy. You know how many people spy on you every time you use your phone? A bunch. How about the app maker spies on you? The device maker spies on you? The carrier spies on you? The government spies on you? And the people that don't spy on you, they can buy your data from the people that do spy on you, and they do. It's openly available. You can make it all go away with AbovePhone.com. And they don't just have great phones. They have the Above Phone. They have the Above Book. I have one right here. They also have the Above Tablet. You can take back your privacy across the board with Above Phone. Check them out today. And if you do pick up a phone from Above Phone and you're an MSB member, $75 anything at Above Phone, you get that off. Additionally, they have a professional who will walk you through the onboarding process to any device that you purchase at AbovePhone.com. Next up, how about low-tech versus high-tech here? Not much more low-tech than a dog. Dogs are one of man's low-tech technologies that go back forever. We've bred dogs in all different sizes and shapes for different jobs, and they are man's best friend, right up until they're not man's best friend, like when they eat your shoes, when they chew your couch into pieces, when they eat your chickens, when they run away and get hit by a car, and if you're lucky and they don't die, you still have a giant vet bill, when they jump on your friend and scratch them up, or whatever else a dog does when it's misbehaving. You need to learn to train yourself to train your dog. Dogs are easy. People are hard. Ask any professional dog trainer that, especially Joel Riles, who runs canineacademy.us, and you'll hear exactly that echoed to you. So with Joel's classes at canineacademy.us, you can train your dog to any level you want. But I recommend everybody start out with at least the core basics of obedience, because no matter what you want that dog to do, whether it's just be a good citizen on the homestead in the house, or be a protection dog, or a sporting dog, or a hunting dog, or a livestock guardian dog, it all starts with core obedience. Get on over to canineacademy.us, consider taking that course. You just want to get an understanding of how Joel teaches online. He has a problem-solving library. It's basically a short, free course to some of the most common problems with your dogs. Take that course first, and then you can get a feel for it and decide if the other paid options are right for you. With that, we've got our intro segment wrapped up, and I want to bring our guest, Dave Feeney, on to talk to us about ditching college for the trades, man. Dave, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing excellent, Jack. It's great to be here.
I'm glad to have you. This is a really cool topic, and it did mesh really well with my show on Monday. I will tell everybody to confess honestly, I'm not a genius for stacking these two together. It was just something on my mind, and I brought it up, and I didn't even know who my guest was. I knew like my next 10 shows, and I didn't know which one was this week. And then this morning when my wife gave me Dave's paperwork, I'm like, oh, I'm a genius. Look what I did. But I think this does fit really well with that show on the different classes of jobs. Dave and I will be talking about that a bit as well. But what I want to start out off with, Dave, is can you just introduce yourself to the audience and tell them kind of like, how did you even, like, let's not get up to the point where you actually started this apprenticeship. You're a young kid. You get out of high school. You decide, like, to go to college. And somehow that changes. How does that work?
Well, so I actually didn't go to college immediately after high school. I grew up in Central Texas in a town called Leander right outside Austin. And my high school had a really good trade program. Whenever I was a sophomore in high school, I started Auto Tech. I took Auto Tech 1, took Auto Tech 2 my junior year, and it was a double block class. It was 3 hours long. We spent an hour in the classroom and we spent 2 hours in the shop every other day. It was awesome. Did that again my senior year. The whole time I also made friends that, like, after school were working on my old Ford Ranger. We're working on my buddy's 350Zs, putting exhaust on. So my senior year, the guidance counselor pulls me aside and says, hey, I got paperwork I got to do. What are the three colleges you're looking at? I tell her, oh, I actually am not going to college. I'm going to go work as a mechanic as soon as I graduate because I've developed these skills that I can use to make money. She says, well, that's not a good answer. Can you at least name three colleges you know so I can write this down and, like, submit my paperwork? She's just doing her job. I'm not upset. But at the time, I was like, okay, yeah, I know Texas State, Texas Tech, University of Texas, whatever.
Yeah.
So I get out of high school. I graduate in June, and I start working at Firestone. I realized pretty quickly working at Firestone that my passion – because I also – in Auto Tech, we had the trade school guys come in and wine and dine us, the UTIs, the YOTechs, the Lincoln Techs. Thank God I have a good mother who was like, you're not going to spend $30,000 to do a job you don't know if you like. Go to the local dealerships, go to the local mechanic shops and ask them what they want to see. Don't just believe the UTI guy. He's a sales guy. He wants you to go there. And so I went to Firestone and they're like, no, man, we'll hire you right now. You can do oil changes. You can bust tires. Like, we'll put you to work as soon as you graduate. Realized very quickly that the whole do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I guess I realized quickly that what I loved was the community of working on cars with my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I loved getting off of school, going and hanging out with all the boys, wrenching on a car, and it was no rush. We replaced the clutch on my buddy Richard's car, and that six-hour job took us 3 days. Nobody cared, though, because we were all having fun. Firestone, it was 0.3 hours. You got paid for an oil change from when you grab the ticket, go grab the car, pull it into the shop, lift it up, start draining oil. You have 18 minutes to do it. If it takes you 30, that's too bad. You still get paid for 18. So I lasted probably 6 or 7 months at Firestone. And then whenever the winter semester started at Austin Community College, I was like, I made a mistake. I'm going back to college or I'm going to college.
Okay.
And so that was my first experience with college. I did a full load at Austin Community College. It was not hard, but I was just bored. And I was like, I could be making money. I don't like doing this. And so I got a part-time job at a local mechanic shop that would let me work 3 hours a day after school so I could still make some money. Then I got a job valeting cars at the W in Austin, doing that from six when I got off at the mechanic shop until midnight. And I just sort of burned myself out from going to school and working and doing too much. And not really, I thought about what I wanted to do and I didn't know. And so I felt like I was wasting time in college. So I dropped out after that semester. And I had a family friend who lived in California. And he was a superintendent for a general contractor. He told me, hey, man, if you're – I was also – all my friends are away at college. I'm living at home. Everybody's gone. I was just bored. I didn't have a lot of stuff to do, and everybody was away. So I was sort of depressed is a strong word, but I was just sort of down because all my friends were gone and I was sort of like not doing what I should be doing and going to college, like not doing what society pressures you to do. So I had this family friend who reached out and said, hey, I can get you a job on the job site, but you're going to be a laborer making $100 a day. It is not a glamorous job. And I jumped at the opportunity. Get to go sleep on someone's couch in California. Absolutely, I'll do that. I was 19 years old and packed a suitcase and hopped on a plane and moved out there with everything I had in a suitcase. And I started work, and it was hard work, but it was definitely a class three job. I looked at it strategically. Whenever I started working, the first thing that the person letting me live with them told me is, as a laborer, you're going to get to see every trade on site. You're going to get to help the plumbers when the plumbers need help, help the electricians when the electricians need help, help anybody who needs help. That's going to be your job. And when you're not doing that, you're moving dirt, you're sweeping floors, whatever. And so after about 6 months, I had become really good friends with some carpenters. And I was able to use that relationship of showing up to work every day on time, working as hard as I could. One of the carpenters said, hey, I know a guy who owns a cabinet shop and he needs some help. Would you be interested in that job? And I jumped at the opportunity. I started working at this cabinet shop. And to this day, that was probably my favorite job I worked, because I would be plane in wood. This wasn't like a production shop. We would buy rough lumber, plane it down, join it down to dimensional lumber, make the doors, make the cabinet boxes, make the legs. Everything was custom, and it was really interesting. But after about 6 months, I sort of started missing home and realized that California is expensive. It's hard to make enough out here. And as a just turned 20-year-old kid working in a cabinet shop making 12 bucks an hour, I made more in Texas making 8 bucks an hour whenever I was in high school because of the state income taxes. I was still young and dumb. I didn't even think about state income taxes. And so I moved back to Texas, start working as a residential plumber.
Okay.
Man, great job, great experience to get. But after 7 months working as a residential plumber, I didn't like it. It just wasn't my job. And I guess I don't think I'm a quitter. I think I'm someone who's always known what they wanted and didn't want to waste too much time. And whenever I spent 6 or 7 months at a job and I looked at the highest man on the totem pole and said, that's where I'm going. I don't know if that's where I want to end up. I would find something else. So I went back to college. I had a few buddies who were going to Texas A&M, and they were doing the construction science program at Texas A&M. And that sounded super interesting to me. I was like, construction science, work for these big general contractors around the country. I'm going to do that. So I moved out to College Station. I started going to school. My mom was helping me out, so I wasn't having to work. I was just focusing on school full time. And I am not a school person. I have never been a school person. When I was in high school, I got bad grades in English and I got bad grades in science and math, but I got great grades in auto tech. And so the school system was not good for me. So after a year at Blinn, I dropped out, or not a year, after a semester at Blinn, I dropped out and started working installing residential windows and doors. And that was a job with a huge growth potential if you were running it yourself and if you were smart. But the guy I worked for was not very smart. I was used to the 7 to 3:30 construction schedule at that point, and this guy rolled out of bed at 9 to go to work. And after, I was also 1099'd, and he started getting behind on my pay. I probably should have stopped working whenever he got behind on my pay for the first week, but I was like, no, he's a good guy. He'll help me out. And the whole time I'm also always talking to people. So I get side work here and there, and I'm doing side work for this guy named Professor Solis, who's a construction science professor at Texas A&M. He needs some window work done. He was an older man and he didn't want to do work anymore, and I was happy to help him out. And he taught me a lot about the construction process, the business side, the finance side, the management side. And he just sat me down one Saturday when I was doing worm and said, what are you doing? I said, well, Professor Solis, I don't really know. Like, I'm going to work every day and I'm figuring it out. And he's actually the guy who got me into electrical. He was like, you need to be an electrician. This was December of 2018.
Okay.
He says, electrical is a growing industry. You need to get into electrical work. As a construction science professor at Texas A&M, any new work that goes on at Texas A&M goes through the COSI department.
Okay.
And so he knew all the local contractors that Texas A&M used on all their buildings. And he said, I'm going to call the president of Britt Rice. They're the biggest electrical contractor in town. And I'm going to get you an interview. And then you're going to get yourself a good job. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I went in and they were like, you got all this construction experience. Why electrical? And I don't remember what I said, but I tried my best to sell that this was it. And after a month, I was like, this is it. I'm not dirty. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm learning a lot. I also saw the growth potential in the electrical industry. I saw that, like, I could just be an electrician for the rest of my life, or I could also go into, like, project management, estimation. I could go into sales. I could go into all these different things. The one downside of that company was it was a company that didn't have a very good structured apprenticeship program. So you would get all the on-the-job training you needed, but there are some electrical concepts that are important to understand as an electrician that you're never going to get in the field. You're only going to get it from cracking a book and having a guy smarter than you explain it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I also, this was also when COVID hit, and I started working electrical in January of 2019. I had been at this company for a year and 3 months when COVID hit. And my whole apprenticeship, they always said, man, you don't have to worry about getting laid off. You're the cheapest guy on site. Like, they never lay off the cheapest guys on site. COVID was one of those weird times where they started putting limits on manpower that every company could bring. So my job site that I was on that had 30 electricians, they said, we can only have 10 guys on site. One of the few times, they don't care that you're the cheapest guy. They need 10 knowledgeable guys that don't need any help. 10 guys that you can lay out and can get it done. And I wasn't one of those guys after a year. So I got a job at a different contractor building a county jail in Franklin, Texas, one of the last dry cities in Texas, probably an hour north of College Station. And that was a super interesting job, a job I got to learn a lot on. Bringing a county jail up out of the ground is all block wall construction. Basically, I worked a lot in Texas for different non-union contractors because where I lived in College Station was you either join the Austin local or the Houston local or the Dallas local. There is no College Station local. There's not enough work. Britt Rice has it all.
Yeah.
And so I was like, always heard about the union, but didn't know what it was. And it wasn't until, well, actually, hold on. Let me say, if you're a young guy or gal and you don't want to go to college, one thing that I did that I think was really smart, and I wasn't a smart guy when I did it on accident. If you want to get into a trade, I was from a suburb outside Austin. Austin was too expensive for an apprentice electrician to live in by 2019 when I got started. But College Station was a college town. Housing was cheap. Not a lot of college kids want to work, so there's a decent amount of job openings, especially in all the trades.
Ah.
And so I made about the same I would make in Austin, but I was paying the cost of living in a significantly less expensive college town. And I also still got a really good traditional college experience in the sense that my roommates went off to school. I went off to work, and then we got home. And when they would go to a party, I was invited to the party. When they would have people over, like, just being in a college town, you're going to be around people your age. You're going to get that college experience, but you're also going to be able to afford to live there most likely. Like, it was a sort of geographic arbitrage, like you say, that you relocate to somewhere that's less expensive, that has more jobs. And college towns are a lot of fun to live in when you're in your early 20s. I'm glad I don't live there anymore. But so it wasn't until me and my girlfriend, moved from College Station to Nashville for a job that she got because she went to Texas A&M and got a good degree and actually uses her degree still to this day. And so her job moved us from College Station to Nashville, Tennessee. And she was like, is that okay? Maybe. I'm an electrician. We can go anywhere and I'll be able to find work. Like, yeah, absolutely. Sorry. And so, yeah, moved to Nashville, start working for a local electrical contractor there. Man, once you have a little bit of experience, it's really easy to get a job. You call a place, say, I know A, B, and C phase colors, and I can bend conduit. And they're like, okay, can you start tomorrow? And we'll send you an address. It's really casual. And at the time in Nashville, they were building a big Facebook data center. And so they were throwing money on it. They were paying over scale. They were working 60 hours a week. They were giving $150 a day per diem. And all the guys on my job site heard about it. All the guys on my job site wanted to go out there. And so I learned it was a union job. So I called the union hall and talked to them and was like, hey, this is my experience. This is what I have done. I'd like to go work on that job, making all that money. And they said, come on in. We got paperwork for you to fill out. So I went in and they offered me their apprenticeship program, which was a 5-year apprenticeship program. And I already had 3 years in the trade. So I was kind of hesitant at that point because I felt like, oh, I know enough. I don't want to be an apprentice again. Like, I'm almost a journeyman. One more year and I'm a journeyman. I don't want to start from the beginning. But I thought about all the stuff I didn't know that I wasn't going to learn in the field. And I saw how structured the apprenticeship program was.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose knowledge. I chose to take a little bit of a pay cut and get to really learn more about electricity and like how electrical contracting works, how electricity works, how motors work. It's a really, the IBEW apprenticeship program is a pretty in-depth program. So right now the program I'm in, it's a 4-year program. It is, so your first year, you make $18 an hour, you get all your health insurance paid for, and you go to class once a week. And they give you, the school that you go to finds you your job at a contractor you work for. And so I'm working for a contractor right now that's what they call a signatory contractor, someone who signs on to use union labor. I don't have to do job applications anymore. I don't have to look for jobs. I haven't updated my LinkedIn in 4 years because whenever I lose a job, I go back to my school, or once I finish my apprenticeship, I'll go back to my hall and I'll see what jobs are open and I'll take one of those jobs. And if there's a job for the Apple data center going in Forest City here and I have a journeyman classification and they need a journeyman, I take that call and I go out there, and like, it's really as easy as that. And so it's a very good, in my opinion, it's a very good system, the system I'm in. Cause whenever I had the experience of a non-union shop, it just wasn't as organized and it was really on you to do any learning you wanted to do. If you wanted to understand AC theory or DC theory or how motors work or how instrumentation works, you could learn that. But you have to learn that yourself. There isn't a program.
Yeah. Okay. How does a person find these opportunities, whether it's in electrical or any of the trades? I mean, a lot of these unions have programs like this and things well beyond just electrical.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's plumbing, there's pipe fitting, there's steelwork, there's welding. Like, there's a ton of different things out there that people need to explore. And I think there's like, this is one of those things that's like, it's not a secret, but it's a secret by, it's a functional secret, right? Like, people talk about somebody has a functional monopoly. It's like, there are alternatives, but 95% of people use, you know, Windows, right? So like a functional monopoly. And so this is like a functional secret in that the information's out there, but you most people I talk to that get into an apprentice program, they knew somebody that knew somebody. Or they knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody, right? Like, it's somebody, like, it's almost like an insider type thing, even though anybody can apply for it.
So I hear that a lot. And I think it's one thing once I got into the union, I told them, like, I started going to union meetings and I said, hey, y'all's marketing is really bad. Like, y'all do not market this well enough. People don't know. Like, and so I asked them, I asked the director of my school in Nashville, and I would go to the hall and talk to them, and I would say, what are y'all doing? Can I help you come up with an action plan? Like, this is a great option and not enough people know about this. And so they're working on strategies. I know in Nashville and here, they do career days at high schools where they try to explain to kids what an electrician does. One thing I would say, if you really want to get into any trade, starting as a laborer like I did sucks, but it's a class three job. If you go in as a laborer just to make a paycheck, you're going to hate your job and it's going to be a class one job. But if you go in as a laborer saying, I want to get to see what an electrician does every day on site, I want to get to see what a pipe fitter does every day on site, I want to get to see what the iron workers do, they're not just going to let you onto a construction site to do a little tour. You got to be in your vest and hard hat and work for somebody. And being a laborer is sort of the easiest path. If you don't know someone, it's also just hard to get into the apprenticeship off the rip with no experience. I got in easily because I had 3 years of non-union experience. Like, I knew electrical work and I knew I wasn't going to drop out of my program, but they worry about that because the attrition rate in that program, when we started our first year, we had about 100 first years start. I'm still in communication with my friends back in Nashville, and they say there's about 40 kids in the class for our fourth year class. So over 4 years, we lose 60 people. And that's something that a lot of those people were green, had never worked construction jobs, and they get on a job site and they realize, this isn't for me. The same way I did that at Firestone. I got the Firestone and after 6 months was like, no, I'm going to find something better to do than this. So I think the reason it seems hard for some people is any apprenticeship program you get into, they want to see some skin in the game in the sense that you've worked hard, because they don't want to spend the money. So in Nashville, each year of school costs $600, right around there, $600 to $800 depending on the year. And that covered your books, your lab fee, all that stuff. And they subsidize everything else. Like, part of our dues goes to paying the teachers, paying for the building. The union hall and the school subsidize the tuition quite a bit. So they want to make sure that the people that they're letting into this program are serious people that are going to turn out, become journeyman electricians, and pay back into the system. They don't want the guy that's going to come do it for a year or two and quit. So I think when you can show, I worked on a job site from 6 to 2:30 or 7 to 3:30 for the last year as a laborer, I can do this. It shows some grit. Also, I'm always talking to the laborers on the job site. When I see them, I'm like, hey man, you like this? Yeah. You ever thought about being an electrician? I can give you all the paperwork you need to fill out to go down to the school. Like, it's one of those things. Once you're in the environment, you get exposed to it and you get to see how to get into it. Where if you're working at Chili's as a waiter right now, and you're trying to get into the pipe fitter's apprenticeship or the iron worker's apprenticeship, if you don't have an uncle or dad or brother who can walk you through that process, you're just so far removed from construction as a whole that it can seem really daunting to get into.
Yeah, I love that you did so many things because that let you honestly say, I know I want to do this because I've done other things and I didn't like those and I did this and I like that. I also think as you get into unions, and we can talk about that for a little bit here in a minute, but unions generally do not like non-union work that competes with them. That's kind of the whole point of the union. So if they look at a person and they don't have any real experience, they think, well, we're going to be training this person to basically go off and do non-union work, right? If they don't make it all the way through, we give them a start and then they go get a job with a yuck in a truck and we actually we're training our competition then. Whereas when you have somebody that's already somewhat successful and progressing through the trade, not in the union, well, now we're putting them in the union. We're taking them out of that yucky space, is the way they kind of look at it, like where they underbid our jobs and shit like that. So we want that person in because otherwise they remain a competitor. Because you're right. If you have a dad, an uncle's former roommate or something like that, and they say, hey, let's get this guy in the program, he's probably getting in. I grew up in Pennsylvania. There's a lot of that shit up there. Like, you either want to know somebody or know somebody that knows somebody. But you can get in kind of the way you did, which is do the work. And I think that's really valuable, too, because you don't want to make that investment in some trade that you're going to find out, I fucking hate this. You know?
My mom was always right.
And I kind of went in the Army as a mechanic for the same reason you thought you wanted to do it. Like, I love working on cars. About the fifth time I had to change a tire that required a fucking forklift without a forklift, I didn't like it anymore.
You know? No.
Yeah, I'm being dead serious with that. Like a Hemet tire and shit, they weigh hundreds of pounds. You know, just a tire. I thought it would be great to work on the big trucks because you don't have to get into tiny spaces.
Yeah.
Turns out the really big nut is still in a fucking tiny space to cut your arm, right? Like, I didn't enjoy that at all. So, When you talk about union, though, can you explain to people kind of what a union does? And because I think it's one of those things that, like, some people hate them, some people love them. I think they have pluses and minuses, like all things in life.
So I can really only speak to building trades unions.
Sure.
Because the structure of a building trades union and the structure of, let's say, the Teamsters or the teachers union are going to be very different than the structure of our union. And even between the UA, which is the plumbers and pipe fitters, the SMART union, which is the sheet metal workers, I don't know how they operate, but I can tell you about the IBEW. And so how the IBEW operates is there's two organizations. The IBEW is the organization I'm a member of, and they represent me against my boss. And my boss, the company I work for, is a part of NECA, the National Electrical Contractors Association. So all around the country, there's a NECA chapter for every IBEW chapter. And whenever it comes to contract negotiation time, my democratically elected union representatives negotiate with the Contractors Association for this specific region. So we have a democratic process where we elect our business manager, we elect our president, we elect our treasurer and our recording secretary and our executive board. So we aren't negotiating for ourselves. We're putting people in power to negotiate for us as a collective. And I think it's a good process for work like construction workers. I think, if you've ever heard of the Battle of Blair Mountain, it was one of the biggest rebellions of working men against the U.S. government by the end of the day. It was originally against the Baldwin-Felt security guards and the coal operators. But the history of unions is that me as an electrician, I'm replaceable. There are dozens of electricians. Even if I'm the smartest and best electrician, they can fire me today and get somebody else from the hall tomorrow who can bend pipe the same, pull wire the same, and the light still turns on. And So having a union is saying we're negotiating as a collective. You're not negotiating with me as an individual. You're negotiating with the electrical workers of Charlotte, North Carolina. And to me, the biggest thing about a union is the fact that we have a contract. Whenever I worked for non-union shops, the tool list was whatever my boss wanted me to have today. And if that meant a $600 knockout set when I'm making 15 bucks an hour, you need to go pick one up. And so for me, that was one of the biggest things of going from non-union work to union work. I found out we had a contract and I said, let me get a copy. I'm going to read it front to back. I want to know everything I'm expected to do, everything I'm expected to bring, and the things I can expect from the contractors. One of those things is my wage. The other part of that is my retirement account. Another piece of that is my health insurance. A really cool thing about the IBEW is when you hear someone say, like in my local, IBEW 379, a journeyman electrician makes $33 an hour.
Okay.
If you were at a non-union shop, you'd have to say, oh, $33 an hour. He probably pays this much a month out of pocket for insurance. If he wants to get that 3% match on his 401k, he's got to take 6% out of that. When we say $33 an hour, that's on the check. Then it's $9 an hour goes to your health and wellness that pays for your health insurance. Then there's $2.50 an hour that goes into your SERF retirement account. As you pay dues, you build pension credits with the international office. So when you retire after 30 years of being a good dues-paying member, you can retire with a retirement account and a traditional pension. And so to me, that was one of the biggest benefits I have seen personally is I have good health insurance that I don't have to pay for. And the other thing the union provides for me is since my health insurance isn't through my contractor, if I get laid off from this contractor and move to a separate contractor, I don't go on COBRA. I don't go on any of these crazy things. We have the ability to bank our hours. So because our health insurance is a defined contribution on our check, we have to work, I think, 135 hours a month to cover our insurance for the month. If you work 160 hours, you get to bank that differential of hours, and you can bank up to 6 months of insurance hours. So what some of these smart travel and electricians do is they'll go work somewhere where there's a lot of work, working a lot of overtime, paying a lot of per diem, and they'll work like crazy for 6 months. And then they'll quit their job and go home, and they don't go back to work until they get the letter in the mail from the insurance that you're almost out of hours. And so I think to me that's the biggest difference I've seen from union and non-union is just the ability to keep and retain good benefits. Because that's the thing about a contract is it's a legally binding contract. I love your anarchism philosophy, and I think personally the philosophy of the IBEW is very anarchistic because when we negotiate with the contractors, we're participating in what's called our negotiations are lined up to where we do what's called binding arbitration. So if before the end of the contract happens, we can't come to an agreement. We don't go to Uncle Sam. We don't go through the courts. There's this thing called the Council of Industrial Relations, and it's three NECA people in D.C. and three IBEW people in D.C., and we bring our labor contract dispute to them, and they say, hey, this is what we're doing, and it's binding arbitration. So I think also if you work in a right-to-work state like me, I'm consenting to be a member of my union. No one's forcing me to be a member. I see the value they provide, and I choose to participate, but no one's forcing me to participate.
Yeah.
I think it's a very – it's a system that, like, I think is pretty good. I'm sort of – bias though.
Yeah, I have mixed emotions about unions because I've seen both sides. Like down here in Texas, like you said, it's right to work state. The union system truly is voluntary. And because they have so much high quality labor, the industries deal with them because this is where the talent pool is. And they're competing with the non-union shops in an open market.
Yeah.
Places like New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and Illinois are not that way. Here's an example of how far this will go and what they can get away with there. We were at a trade show in Chicago, and we were supposed to have power to our booth, and we did not have power to our booth. They're going to get there eventually, but like we had certain things. This is like high-end test equipment. It takes a while to set it up. So I open my bag. I got two extension cords in there, and I run a couple extension cords. I even tape them on the floor.
Oh, right? Jack, no.
No. So we got everything set up. It didn't really matter. It ended up costing me two extension cords that I didn't really care about. Getting it set up was more important. So we had it set up. And I went to go do something, and I was going to come back and pull the cords back up. Come back, and all the cords are sitting on a table, cut into pieces. We cut a 100-foot extension cord into about 50 pieces, about 2-foot lengths of it. And just laid it on the table like, you know, you're taking a union man's job or something. And,
yeah.
Like, see, that's not, to me, that's not cool. Because we had already paid for power. They were going to get their union job or whatever. And if you did that here, I don't think it would, like, no one gave a fuck that that happened. Like, hey, you shouldn't have done it. Like, tough shit.
Yeah.
Another example is in New York City. I got called in. It was a union dispute thing, and the one of the sales reps that worked for the firm that I worked for, like, there was nothing for me to do in the end because I was test equipment. and they wanted to make sure something worked or something. And we walk in, and this huge fat dude sitting at like a $50,000 conference table. And I walk in and said, I'm not what I'm here to do and help, you know. And they, we need to test the fiber or something, because they were pissed that one of the reps had sold them pre-connectorized fiber. So that took away the labor of doing the individual connections on the optical fiber. And the union boss dude like grabs this thing of like spider kitted, like Teflon hanging out the end of it. Clearly somebody took a pair of clients and just hacked them off the end of the thing. He said, your connectors fell the fuck off. And he threw them on the table. And I went, you know what, guys, there's nothing for me to do here. I'm out. So when I saw shit like that up in the Northeast, like, I'm not exactly a fan. But I also worked with unions down here, and it's like a totally different experience when you can't mandate the union labor.
It is. It's always really hard to just – blanket statements are always bad. And just saying, yeah, like, I'm pro-union,
yeah,
I've always been conflicted about stuff like government unions. Any union for a government job, because
oh,
to me,
yeah, no,
the whole reason that unions existed in the first place was because capitalism, bad,
yeah,
and – private industry, bad, and will, yeah, take advantage of you. And so, like, you need workers' protections, and the government will provide those and give your union legitimacy. But when you're negotiating with the government for your job, like, that's the person the private unions went to for help. What do you,
yeah,
mean you need, yeah, a union to deal with the benevolent king,
yeah,
of our government? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's really, I love my union, and that's what I always say. I love my union here, and I kind of have to leave it at that. I always like talking to people about it, because some people just say, oh, yeah, unions are commie. And I'm like, they kind of were at one point. Like, they'd have the same way they got co-opted by organized crime. They also got co-opted by commies. It doesn't mean every single member is a communist or every,
yeah,
single member is a wise guy. Like,
yeah,
these other players came in and co-opted our legitimate thing. And I think at this point we've done a pretty good job of kicking most of them out. But yeah, those strong Northeast. Another bad one I've heard is Detroit, Michigan.
Oh,
I've heard Detroit, Michigan, which, I mean, they got a lot of work and they pay really good. Local 58.
Yeah.
But if you, I drive a Toyota Tundra, an old Toyota Tundra. I'm not getting rid of it till the wheels fall off, because it's paid,
sure,
off. And one of the guys was like, if you ever travel and you go up to Detroit, you better buy yourself a cheap little Chevy or Ford car, because they'll slash your tires on your Toyota.
Yeah. Yeah. It has nothing to do with American versus foreign either, because most of the Toyotas are built in America.
Dude,
it's
exactly
non-union shop. That's the beef up. Yeah, you got to be careful up there. With so many trades out there, how do you choose the right one? And I don't really mean you, Dave, because you found your path and you know what you want to do now. The,
yeah,
the young person listening that's sitting here like, I'm going to be graduating high school next year. I did last year, and I really hate what I'm doing now. This sounds like an interesting path, but they don't know what they want to do. You know, what do you suggest they do?
I would tell those people to just look into all the different options you have locally. Look at, and this isn't saying go join a union, but unions are just normally a lot more organized and a lot better at walking you through their schools, walking you through their halls, helping explain what they do. Like, look up the UA, look up the Union Association. That'll cover pipe fitting, plumbing, all of those trades. The IBEW is the electrical workers. Look your local IBEW hall up. The SMART, S-M-A-R-T, is the sheet metal workers. They do HVAC work. They do like planes. I think the Boeing guys who were on strike were sheet metal workers. What are some other unions? Oh, a good one. I think it's ITSC. It's the elevator workers union. Man, if you want to make money, join the elevator workers union. They have a good mix of work too. You do a little bit of welding, a little bit of iron work, a little bit of electrical. Their scope encompasses everything that goes in an elevator shaft. But I'd say, dude, watch YouTube videos. Is there anything you've tried that you like? Like, I love doing carpentry, but I can afford to do carpentry in my garage now on the weekends, and I couldn't afford to do that when I worked as a carpenter. So it's a mix of what do you value, what do you enjoy, but at the end of the day, money matters too. And I like electrical. I liked carpentry more. But electrical pays me enough money that I can do the things I like after work. I think the older I got, too, I realized I didn't like Firestone, but if I worked there today, I'd probably just put my head down and shut up. But since I was young and didn't have an expensive house, expensive cars, didn't have anything going on, I could afford to say, this isn't for me, and find something else making 12 or 14 bucks an hour. So I think it definitely is a young man's game, because starting out in any apprenticeship program, you could go work at Chick-fil-A and probably make about the same as a first year apprentice. It's the growth opportunities you get.
I think a big thing would just be understand how much is available. Is like, what is, like, when I was a kid in school, I didn't realize when they said you can be anything you want. Like, I thought, I was like, okay, that's a catchphrase. And it was, but it was also like, I didn't know what anything meant. Right. Like, I knew there was a lot of things you could do, but I had no idea how many things a person can do to make money. And like in these trades, like, here's one no one thinks of. It's very highly paid. Elevator. Elevator work is, like, especially in places like San Francisco, New York.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to live there, right? So that would be the other thing. So what's available, and then where do you go to earn the real money, and do you want to be in that place, right? Like, go ahead.
One thing I will say about elevators is, because a good buddy of mine in Nashville wanted to drop out of our electrical apprenticeship to go join the elevator union apprenticeship, because I think in Nashville they made 45 bucks an hour while our electricians were making 34 or 35.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think I'm going to do it. And I just asked him, do you ever want to start a business? He said, I don't know, maybe one day.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's really hard to start your own elevator business, because you only got so many shops in town, and like, the insurance is crazy. The wages you're going to have to pay people are crazy. So if you have an entrepreneurial bone in your body, maybe stay away from elevators. Now, if you're cool with always being a wage worker, and also take into account where elevators are. Do you always want to live close to Nashville and have to drive into the city every day? Or do you want to move out to somewhere in the country? Do you want to move out to Camden, Tennessee with John and be John's electrical guy?
Right. Yeah. No elevators are in Camden, right?
And so, I think, you can't be the elevator guy out at John's place out in Camden. Yeah. And so that's the one thing I would always tell people to consider with trades like elevators. Ironwork is not the same, but can be similar. You're either going to be on a pipeline or you're going to be erecting steel buildings. And where do they build steel buildings? Like, you'll get your occasional Amazon distribution center, big facility out in rural America, but you also don't get much of a choice. So I think part of why I really like electrical is because I see the entrepreneurial path I can take, that as soon as I finish my apprenticeship, I can spin this a million different ways if I want to. And I think there are a lot of trades that sort of pay you really well, but lock you down.
That's true. That's true. So like I said, know what's out there, what you want to do. Like, the only thing about electrical, let's even look at it a different way. I don't want to grow a giant, Dave's Electrical Corporation or whatever after you're done. But you can get a pretty good pension after 30 years of this. Well, if you start when you're, let's say, 20, that's 50. 25, that's 55. People tend to have quite a bit of mileage left in them at that point, but maybe they don't want to work full-time anymore. If you're an electrician, like one of the guys that I had out here do a lot of work for me, he has his own company now, but initially he was working for another company. But he never worked for that company where he worked for me. He was running side hustle.
Yeah.
And I might pay him like to come out here, run some circuits, and put one of those big-ass fans out in my garage.
Nice.
He was here for like 4 hours. I paid him $600. He had a helper. He probably paid him $100.
Yeah.
Like, he had no real material in that job. I mean, I had a big roll of flex. I think he had a couple quad boxes in that in materials and a fan I had bought. So out of that $600, he probably put $450 in his pocket to work for about 4 hours. Right. And his apprentice probably made, as a helper or whatever, probably made enough money to be worth doing it on a Saturday. That was Saturday work.
Yeah.
So my point there is, you could be doing something like that, almost like a handyman electrician, and you can put $500, $1,000 a week in your pocket while you're retired.
But
you ain't going to do that with an elevator. That's a really good point you brought up.
Yeah, but you also, electrical is a pretty heavily regulated industry, so if you're ever going to do side work, yeah. I personally have never done side work, but if you ever do side work, that's fence post money. That's someone that you know personally that isn't going to rat you out to your local authority having jurisdiction, and that's someone that, like, also just never take a job that you're not absolutely confident you can do, because you can ruin your whole life if you burn someone's house down doing side work on the weekend. So it's something, be very confident, and that's fence post money. That's, what are you talking about? There's always been a receptacle right there on your wall.
Yep, yep. Yeah, that's also like, the other side of that, though, is if you did what I'm talking about, like, he was side hustling, he had that risk, because he was working for a company and doing that on his own. You can set, I mean, you're a licensed electrician.
Yeah.
You can set up a company. You don't have to take a lot of work. That's kind of my point. In that point, it's not side hustle. It's on the books work. I'm a licensed, I'm Dave's Electrical. And you can do that above board work, and you're doing it like any other company. You're just not taking all the jobs.
Yeah. Jack, that's been something I've sort of been thinking a lot about as I'm getting close to the end of my apprenticeship. I have 283 days left. I'm really counting down until I finish.
Sounds like it.
There are so many options, and I don't know what the best option is, because, like, obviously I could stay, I could go travel, and that's one thing I want to tell young people listening about the IBEW is there's a huge culture of traveling. And once you finish your apprenticeship and you top out and you're a book one journeyman, anywhere that has work, you can go travel and you can go make money. And if they have open jobs, you go take the job and they give you an address and you go work that job as long as you need. I know right now there's a bunch of data centers going in Northern Virginia, and there are guys there working 70, 80 hours a week, but they're taking home $4,000 or $5,000 a week because the scale there is $52 an hour. All day, Sundays, double time. They're given $100 a day per diem. Like, there's money to be made if you're willing to travel. And I think I'm definitely going to do that. But for me, it's more, what do I do after? So for, because a lot of people, they get into the trades and they think, oh, I can't do this forever. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to blow my back out, whatever. My girlfriend went to Texas A&M, and so every Saturday we go to a local bar and watch Aggie football with a bunch of other Aggies living here in Charlotte. And I was talking like I do, and I was talking to this guy who works for a equipment manufacturer who manufactures electrical equipment. And I was showing him some pictures of some switch gear I was testing. We were doing injection testing on these like 600 amp pieces of gear, and he was like, what is that? I don't know what that is. So I explained to him the injection test process and how we were like injecting amperage through these breakers to make sure that their different time delay settings tripped correctly and didn't cause a catastrophic breakdown at this data center. And he was like, oh, yeah. I knew what you were doing, but I wanted to see how you explained it. Do you want a job? I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, what you just did is what I need my application engineer to be able to do for the customers. He's a sales guy and he sells electrical equipment. So he was like baiting me. He was trying to see how I would talk and how I would deliver that. And after he heard me, he was like, yeah, bro, whenever you finish your apprenticeship, call me. I have a job for you if you want it. So there's a lot of jobs outside just go through an apprenticeship, become a journeyman, become a foreman, become a general foreman, maybe be a job site superintendent and go gray by 45. Like, there are, you don't have to just do that pipeline. There are lots of other jobs you can do with the experience you gain on site.
Yeah. If someone already has a degree, you know, is it too late for them to maybe go down this road? I don't think so. As many degrees as I've seen at Starbucks getting my coffee for me who can't write Jack on the cup correctly, I would say no. But, I mean, there is like the, you know, the sunken cost fallacy or whatever.
I think so. I have gone through the apprenticeship with a lot of guys who have college degrees. Some of them have meaningful college degrees that they got. They started accounting and they hated accounting. And they quit and took a huge pay cut to become an electrician. I'd say it's never too late. There's a guy in my electrical or in my apprenticeship class who's 63 and about to finish the apprenticeship. And like, he's like, I got another 10 years left in me at least. So I don't think it's ever too late. And I think having a college degree, if you're articulate and you know how to present yourself, is only going to pay dividends once you're finished. I know a kid who just topped out in August, they immediately made him an estimator. And one of the reasons they immediately made him an estimator isn't because he was the smartest guy on site. It's because he had a college degree. There is still somewhat of that mindset of like office people have college degrees. So even in the construction field, if you're an electrician and you have a college degree and you go through an apprenticeship, that's a valuable piece of paper to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely say there's certain places where it meshes well. And it would also be like, if your degree has a lot to do with how business structure works, if you're going to run a business someday, you know, that might be beneficial as well. But there's also like, if you have a degree and it's not doing anything for you, what are you losing by taking a new path? Like, there's a lot of ways to come at that, I guess.
I also think construction is a great motivator to get people to take their college degree serious. I worked with one kid who I started the apprenticeship with, and he was like 3 years into an electrical engineering degree and dropped out, came and worked electrical, lasted 6 months, and was like, bro, if this is the other option, I'm going back to college. And now he's an electrical engineer and he designs power plants in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So like, sometimes getting into construction can be the little kick in the butt you need to take school serious when you go back.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned this already to a degree, but the work can be physically demanding. I worked in the telecom trade, which is very similar physical work. What do you say to people who say, you're going to be broke down by the end of your life, whatever?
How much does the person telling me I'm going to be broke down weigh?
Okay.
I'm going to say two different things to them. If they're a skinny person, I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to be like, yeah, you're right. I use my body every day, but I try to do everything right. If something's too heavy, I'm not mucho macho bravado. I'm going to get somebody to help me lift this 100-pound piece of 6-inch rigid conduit. I'm not lifting that on my own. I'm very focused on bending your knees, lifting with your back. We do stretch and flex every morning on site. Like, if you're an idiot, if you have too much bravado, if you're not willing to ask for help, you can break your body really bad, but you can do that at your house if you're an idiot. Like, it doesn't have to be on a construction site. I think for me, working construction has kept me really healthy. It's made me think about how I eat, how much I weigh, how much water I'm drinking, because when you're working in the Texas heat outside doing duck bank in the middle of July, you're not drinking beer at night. As much as you want to go home and drink a beer, you're like going home and pounding water because you know you're going to be sweating the next day. So I think those people aren't wrong, but you could break your back going to the gym every day and no one says, oh, you shouldn't go to the gym. You could hurt yourself. And then if it's a fat person saying that, I'm like, man, you could get a lot out of construction just being out there sweating. Come on. You're going to tell me that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like you might actually live longer if you get a trade that requires physical labor. And there's more and more people that fit that description every day.
I work with tons of them, and I'm like, how do you – I struggle every day, and I'm like maybe 5 or 10 pounds overweight. How are you actually walking around all day carrying an extra 50 or 60 pounds?
Yeah, yeah. And it's also become more and more the case, too, I think, with younger people. Like, it used to be, like, if you saw a group of guys and they were all kind of fat, they were probably in their 50s, right? Now we got, like, I remember when I was in school, for instance, we had a fat kid in high school. And I don't mean in our class. I mean in high school, like, 4 grades, 9 through 12, we had one fat kid. His name was Jason. Sorry, Jason, but it was you, right? Like, and if you said, who's the fat kid, everybody would have been like, oh, it's Jason Kotchick. Like, I didn't even think about it. Oh, I know who you mean. It was the fat guy. Oh, it's Jason, right? Like, now, like,
That's not a good description.
It's not like it's a skinny kid, right? That stands out, you know? It's kind of crazy. My grandson's in great shape for his age. He's 14, but I go watch him play baseball, and I'd say half of that team are really chunky, and these are the athletes. Now, they're not slovenly or anything. But you're like, bro, you're 14, 15 years old, and you play baseball for a 6A school? And this is, so I think that this is another reason to kind of bring back this work ethic, because people that are out working physically every day tend to be, I'm not going to say they will never get fat. They will be less fat than they would be if they didn't do that.
Absolutely. I think the other thing is, it's hard work, but it's rewarding work. Like, after you get done with that day where you, like, sweat your ass off, busted it all day, but you get to look up in the air and see the 6-inch rigid you just ran 60 feet up to give power to that switchgear room, like, yeah, I immediately pour in gas in my bucket. Like, immediate dopamine hit in my head. I'm like, I did that. Like, I think for me, that's one of the biggest reasons I love the trade, is because I get almost instant gratification when I do a job. May not always be the end of the day. Sometimes it's a long week. But at the end of that week, whenever all that pipes run and all that wires pulled in and you get to throw that switchgear on and it works, you feel like the man. Like, I can't tell you the dopamine hit you get from, like, being the person who helped get this done. I think it's something that's a lot harder to do in the office. It's one of the reasons I kind of don't want to do sales, even though I think I would excel at it, is I just don't think I would get the same dopamine hit off of making a crazy sale that I do off of, like, wiring up a room full of lights, turning the breaker on, flipping the switch, and every light comes on. Like, it's just such a rewarding feeling.
I'll tell you, it's a pretty big dopamine hit when you close, like, a $1.5 million deal. It is. But when you tell your grandson that you closed $1.5 million deal as a salesperson, he doesn't care. But when you tell him you supervise the all of the whole network installation, that giant building over there, they care. I guess there's a little bit more of, like, an understanding cool factor when you're actually building
the physical stuff, product.
You know, like, yeah, so what? You closed the deal. Like, that doesn't even mean anything. But and I think, like, I'm just saying, there is, like, this it's a different feeling to be able to step back and look at something and go, I built that, and it works because I built it.
So in Charlotte, in downtown Charlotte, we have a big, ugly Wells Fargo building, and it's got like a tower, or, like, they call it a handlebar across the top of it. And it was empty, or it was blank, and they decided they wanted Wells Fargo over the top of this building. And this was the second job I worked in when I moved here. And now, every single time I go to downtown Charlotte, I get to point up at that building and say, hey, babe, hey, bro, you see that building right there? You see those lights? You know why they work?
Yeah.
They work because I put it in.
As much optical as we put under the ground here in Texas, I always tell my grandson that when he's on the internet, like, you know, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't even have fucking internet right now. Like, all the internet that runs through Fort Worth side of the Metroplex, somewhere it's running through optical cable that I put in the ground, you know, 20 years ago. 25 years ago now, fuck. No. Almost 30 years ago. Oh, that's bullshit. That's not true. That can't be true, you know? But let's talk about earning potential. Like, you mentioned sales. One of the things I always loved about sales is, at least you believe it when you go in. You can make as much money as you want. Now, what they end up doing is they fucking change your compensation as you make more money. So you have to work harder to make the same money you made last year. But it is kind of open-ended, you know? What is the earnings potential in these trade fields?
So I actually do have some notes. So I'm going to read from my notes that I took. In the IBEW, the highest paid local is local number 6 in San Francisco, California. They make $81.65 an hour. So $81.65 an hour on the check. They get $13 on their pension. They get $8.50 on a separate pension. They get $9.60 that goes into a vacation account that you get access to every 6 months. It's like a forced savings account. And then they get $19 to cover their health insurance and $2.74 for an additional retirement account. So the total package of Local 6 in San Francisco is $134 an hour when you factor in all of the benefits they provide. So high-end is just an electrical worker, not as a foreman, not as a member of management. If there's work in San Francisco, you can go make $81 an hour on the check. On the low end, though, I'm not going to tell y'all just the good stuff. I want you to hear the blood and guts as well. If you live in Martin, Tennessee, Local 925, it's the lowest paid local in the country. They make $25.60 an hour on the check. They make $5.50 into their pension. They get $8.10 to their health and wellness, and they get 77 cents an hour into their retirement account. So one of the good and bad things about the IBEW is we're an international union that, I hate to say it like this, but I think it's the easiest way to understand it, franchises.
Okay.
So like my local in Charlotte obviously makes different than the San Francisco local because we're interacting with people in the Charlotte market and negotiating with people in the Charlotte market. And so there's the earning potential is really like up to you. I know you're so our contract wage here, our contract wage is $33 an hour. That's essentially your minimum wage. If you can prove to the company, hey, I'm worth $40 an hour. There are plenty of guys here that make over scale. All the contract does is set a minimum wage for the classifications of electrical workers. You can always negotiate better for yourself if you want to. The earning potential is, I don't want to say as much or as little as you want, but if you go up to Northern Virginia and you're willing to work 80 hours a week for a whole year, you can take home $250K. Now, I don't want to go work 80 hours a week for a whole entire year, even if I'm making $250K. Maybe I'll do it for 3 or 4 months, but I think it's one of those things. You'll make a comfortable living. You'll never be rich working blue collar work, but you'll also never be poor. And there's so many ways to supplement your income. Overtime's one way, side work's another way. Traveling is something you can do if that's what you're interested in, and you can go to these higher paying locals to stack money. But it's really sort of, I don't know, here I think the average pay for a journeyman electrician working 40 hours a week is $65K a year, $70K a year. It goes up if you're in a higher cost of living place. It goes down if you're in a cheaper place. So it really does just depend. A classic Jack answer. It depends.
It depends, yeah. Yeah, and like how are you going to live and when are you going to make your money? Like somebody, you know, you said you'll never get rich, but I said you'll never be rich fast. It doesn't mean you can't get rich. I mean, the person who's young that once they get out into that world where they can go anywhere, like you're talking about in less than a year for yourself, you know, if that person buys an RV and travels to where the best work is at any given time and lives like a hobo for 2 or 3 years, then that person can then pick where they want to live that has a good recurring ability to work, go buy a house for cash, still have a couple $100,000 set aside, and start building a retirement from that point forward. That looks pretty good when I'll have a house payment. You know, I mean, like, and then you could, most of these little RVs, you can sell the damn, you can drive, you can use one for 3 or 4 years and sell it for what you paid for it if you want to get rid of it.
Man, Jack, it's so good to hear you say that because
don't buy a new one and try to do that. But if you buy a used one, you know.
There are so many guys I work with that are like, what do you mean you're going to travel? Like, what about this? What about that? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's delayed gratification. Like, we make about $1,000 a week here on the check as a journeyman. You're telling me I could quintuple my income?
Yeah.
So I can make in 6 months what I would make here in 2.5 years. And it's a miserable 6 months.
Yeah.
Dude, who cares? Like, I've always loved listening to you because anytime I'm working 60 hours a week, I'm doing side work after work, and I'm like about to break, it'll be a Jack whoop-ass video that's like, y'all aren't working hard enough. If you're young, you need to just like put your head down and work, and it's always like, damn, Jack, you jerk. I needed to hear that.
There's two things about working like a maniac when you're young. Your biggest enemy when you're young is yourself. Because when you have free time, you go to the bar, you chase girls, and you spend money.
Yep.
When you're working like a maniac, you're too tired to go to the bar when you're finally off. You're making money, and you don't go spend it. You don't go spend it. When I was in the Army, for instance, like when we were in Honduras for 6 months, everybody came back with a big pile of money. Well, we had no real expenses. You never have any fucking expenses. You live in the barracks because you didn't have a place to go piss it away. You couldn't go down to Panama City, you know, and hang out at the bar till 2 o'clock in the morning. You didn't spend it. So by working, you don't just have more in, you have less out because you don't have time to get bored. When people get bored and they have a lot of money, and I've seen it in trade jobs, union and non-union both. You know, I saw guys in New Orleans, like, the end of the week, they're, like, asking to borrow money one day before payday. You're like, what happened to your fucking money? They went down to the casino on the ship, and they gambled all their money away playing craps or something. It's like, I'm not going to give you any money. Well, I'll pay you back tomorrow. I'm sure you will, but you're going to keep doing this, right? You're like, until you actually have to suffer a little bit, you're going to keep doing this shit.
Jack, I'm glad you said it, because it is one thing I want to warn any young person who wants to get into the trades and who wants to travel. I've worked with guys that they just got to my job site and they were making $5,000 a week for the last 6 months, and the credit card company's still calling them.
Yeah.
So, like, there are two ways to travel. You could have steak dinner every night, go to the strip club, do whatever drugs you want, and, like, come home with nothing. Or you could – the thing I've heard from the guys that I think are good guys that took me under their wing, they said, you sit your ass in the hotel and you go to sleep, and, like, if you're not at the hotel, you're either making money or you're at the gym making your body better. But, like, we do a thing called Brotherhood Night. Whenever there's big jobs in town that have 100 or 200 electricians on them, we'll find a local bar, and once a week everybody will meet up. They'll have, like, a table where they sell merch and shirts and stuff. And they all say, like, go to the Brotherhood Night, leave by 8, and, like, don't waste your money. If you want to come home with a bunch of money, don't go out. Don't do all that dumb stuff. Like, you need to just – it's going to be miserable, but it's going to be worth it.
You can buy a case of beer to keep in your hotel room and be good for a week for what you'll pay for 3 beers at a bar.
Yeah.
Another way to look at it. I mean, like, you know, if you want to have a few beers, there's a cheaper way to do it than go to a bar and pay. I don't even know what a beer at a bar costs now. I haven't been to a proper bar in so long, I don't even know. But I know that back in, like, the 90s, like, I'm talking, like, not even a high-end bar. I'm talking, like, a redneck bar. A beer was, like, $4.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's probably $6-7 for a fucking, like, long neck now in a redneck bar or some shit. And that just doesn't make any sense to me when you can buy a six-pack for a couple dollars more.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's one thing I like about Charlotte compared to Nashville. I loved living in Nashville, but you tried to go out and, like, all the bars are for tourists. And so they all have tourist prices. You want just a, like, Miller Lite? It's a $12 beer because you're on Broadway.
Okay, that's I'm done there. I'm not doing that.
But that's not normal. Like, in Charlotte, that's not the case unless you go to one of the fancy bars.
Yeah.
But it was just Nashville. They knew their audience. Everyone's here to have fun for a weekend. It's one of the reasons I wanted to get out of Nashville is I like community. I like knowing my neighbors. I like going out to the bar and meeting people that are from here. And me and my girlfriend would go out in Nashville and we'd meet a couple that we liked and hit it off with and be like, oh, where do you live? Oh, we're from Minnesota. Oh, fuck. Okay, cool. Like, would have been cool to hang out with you, but you live in Minnesota and you're just here for redneck Disneyland.
Yeah. I'm not going to dig into it deep here real quick. I'll just mention this. When you said something about Nashville and the bars, there's a new song out by Chris Rock. It's fucking hysterical, and it's about it's basically just it's the kind of song you can only write when you're where Kid Rock is, where you don't give a shit anymore and you don't have to take no for an answer. And it's about, like, all the douchebags having gel in their hair and everybody's drinking Michelob Ultra, and it's pretty freaking funny. It's not even a good song, but it's a funny song.
Okay,
it's worth looking up to everybody in the audience. How do you feel about how schools are doing with promoting trades? I would have answered this question way differently 15 years ago. I think that it's starting to come around again.
I think the fact that we're allowed to participate in Career Day is a good sign. Okay. But I don't know if the culture has genuinely shifted to where, like, guidance counselors and, like, I think if I was graduating today and I was the same kid I was 11 years ago when I got out of high school, I think a guidance counselor would still tell me you need to go to college because I'm kind of smart.
Yeah. And or say, even if you're not going to, I need to put three names down here so that I won't get yelled at.
Yeah, and so, like, I think even if the schools are at least allowing us to come in and talk to people, I don't know if the culture has actually shifted to where people think trades are a viable option. I think there are people like you and me. There are people that know guys like me that I help change their mind. But even then, they're like, I don't know if I'd want my son or daughter to be an electrician. I think they should go to college. So I think there's always work to be done on sort of letting people know that blue collar work is like a good, honest living. And it's, I make more as a fourth year apprentice than my teachers in high school made in Texas. And yeah, I have to work a little overtime to do that, but still, I didn't go to college. I have no money held up and I don't have to deal with those kids. Like, I get to deal with annoying construction work. Jack, I'll tell you, the one reason I love construction is because it's one of those places where you can just talk to people. You don't have to censor yourself. You can't be an asshole. And if you are, someone's going to straighten you out. But if you think something looks bad, you can say, that looks really bad. I wouldn't have done it that way. No one's getting a hurt feelings report filed. Nobody's like losing their mind over it. You can just talk to people. There isn't the corporate fakeness I hear about from my girlfriend where, oh, so-and-so like said this to me, but then behind my back, they said this. I'm like, oh, dude, on a job site, if you don't like someone, you say, I don't like you, but I'll work with you. And like that's, people have told me that. And I'm like, yeah, bro, we're both just here to make money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's make it easy. Let's make it as easy as we can be. We don't have to be friends. We just got to keep making money.
Plenty of people work with people they don't really like to begin with. I've never even found that to be an impediment. My big thing is I never really got close to anybody I worked with anyway. So it didn't, yeah. I didn't like the, if I didn't like you, it meant you were fucking dragging ass and didn't do your job or you showed up late or you pissed off customers. Right. Those are the reasons I wouldn't like you. Like your personality or your personhood and what you did in your life outside of work, I didn't know. So I couldn't have a problem with it. Right. Like we're here to work. Do your work. Work harder. Keep working. Go home. Right. Show up on time. I don't give a fuck. Like, and I think that that's really how work should be approached. And I think that's how a lot of trade jobs are approached. And I think that actually has something to do with, people will be pissed at me for saying this, why there's so few women in it. Because women are all about feels and shit. I'm not even saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's different. And, like, women go out and have girls' night. And guys are like, I only hang out with the fucking people I like. There's no such thing as guys' night. Like, we might even call it that, but it's just, like, that's because guys are going to – it doesn't mean it's a song.
Me and two other guys.
It doesn't mean, like, you get to go just because you're one of the guys. Right? Like, you're not coming unless we like you. Right. Yeah. And like, I think there is something to, like, that's what's beautiful about the trade space as a whole. And even things that maybe aren't in these union shops is that it is work. It's like you go to work, you do the work. You might work 80 hours this week and 50 hours next week and feel like there was no overtime because of the difference in certain hours, even though you did some overtime. But in the end, it's just work. And when you freaking leave, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm done. Like, there's, you know, there's not a whole lot of – now, when I was in the telco space, there was someone like, the pager goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning. We need you to go to El Paso, right? I'm sure that happens in this space too. But overall, like, you're done work, you go home.
Yeah. I mean, you do – you develop relationships with all the people you work with, though, because a lot of the time you are tooled up directly with someone and, like, y'all are working together for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day. Y'all are stuck in the basket of a boom lift. Y'all are – working in close proximity and talking helps pass the time. And there are some times that, like, the person you're talking to, it's just like, hey, man, let's just work. And there are other times where it's like, man, I like working with this guy. We chat the whole time. We get a bunch of stuff done. It's always fun. But I think one thing that would surprise people is how social construction work is. Like, there's not a lot of time, unless you're in the service department, where you're just working by yourself. A lot of it is teamwork. A lot of it is working with two or three, or sometimes on wire pulls, whenever they don't send out the tugger, there'll be five guys on one end pulling and three guys on one end pushing. And like, you don't have to like those guys, but it helps when you like them.
Yeah. I got along with everybody, just didn't really get along with them after work because I didn't hang out with them after work. I think part of it was also like when I was in that space, I was at the very beginning, I was really young and all of my contemporaries were really young and I didn't really do really young shit. So that was out the window. And then there's something that happens when you become the boss. People don't want to hang out with the boss after hours, right? Like they want to talk shit about the boss after hours. So that's okay. You know? So you end up developing your own peer groups, I think. And I think people would be actually, like you said, you can get along with people at work, but there's a lot less problems if you're not emotionally connected to the people at work.
Yeah.
You might have to have that guy work for you someday. You might have to work for him someday. You might have to fire him someday.
Well, and that's one thing about the union.
You might have to send him home for the day, you know, like, okay, look, you're not fired or nothing, but you're off the job for the day without pay because you fucked up today. And that's, you know, you might have to do those things. And it's easier when you're at least at arm's length from that person where it's like, hey man, we're cool. No, we're not cool. You showed up late for work, go the fuck home. Right? Like you have to be that way in certain situations.
And I think that's definitely something about the trades. Oh man, I lost my train of thought. Sorry. All right, let's run it.
I was ranting about throwing people off the job and sending them home or whatever.
Oh, but yeah. I mean, I think you should never get too close of friends with your boss. One boss I had, I had three guys. We would go out to the bar next to the job site after work. And we liked our boss, but he also like understood exactly what you said. So he'd come, he'd drink one beer, he'd buy us all around a beer, and then he'd go home. And we'd stay and hang out a little longer. And that made us all like him even more because it was like, wow, he read the room.
Yeah. 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 What does a typical day look like for you on a job? Just so people can, let's end with that. Like, what does it look like? You know, day goes to work. What is the day like? Because that way people can decide, like, is this the kind of thing I want to even look at?
All right. So depending on the site you're on, I'm going to go with my worst site I've worked on. That way people know the worst, and then maybe I'll say the best too. Okay. But the worst site I've worked on, it was a 50-mile drive from the house. It was a 6 a.m. start time. So I was up at 3:45 every morning to get all my ducks in a row before I leave, make some tea, make some breakfast, and then get on the road to drive an hour to work and start at 6. And you're doing work. You're bending pipe. You're pulling wire. You're doing in-slab rough-in if you haven't poured a slab yet. If you're doing underground, you're digging. If you're lucky, your boss got a mini X out there, but most of the time that's not in the budget. So like you have a shovel and a Texas toothpick and you're going to work. You're gluing PVC glue. I think the thing I love about electrical is the day always can look so different. You get to see a job from coming out of the ground. You're huffing PVC glue all day, sticking PVC together. They pour the slab. Then you're doing in slab roughing. You're running pipe, pulling wire, setting boxes, getting everything worked out. And then top out whenever you finish and you're doing trim, it's like terminating all the devices, terminating everything. So there's a huge scope of what you could be doing, but it's definitely, if you're not an early riser, you're going to learn to be an early riser because most jobs are 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. start time. And like right now I'm on a great job. I'm on a job that starts at 7, goes to 3:30. It's 10 minutes from my house. I can wake up at 6 and get to work on time. And we show up. Normally you start with like a safety meeting in the morning that'll talk about these are the common hazards on this job site. These are what you need to look out for. Then you do stretch and flex, and stretch and flex is just doing all the limber up stretches for preventing, what do they call it? Repetitive stress injuries. And after that, whatever your task is, it could be, hey, you're going to be pulling all this MC through all these receptacles in this wall. It's work, 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 either by yourself or with your crew until 9. Then you get a little 15-minute coffee break. Everybody gets together. It used to be everybody gets together and shoots the breeze. Now it's just everybody on like TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. Nobody's really talking. Then you go back to work and I think my favorite job was when I was just running a bunch of big conduit. It was 4-inch EMT at a GM battery plant, and we ran miles of that stuff. And it was, we had a team of people where me and a journeyman were in one lift, a buddy of mine and his journeyman were in another lift. We had ground guys that we'd be calling measurements out to, and we were a well-oiled machine, man. They had to tell us, slow down a little bit. Y'all have until the end of the week to do this, and they're going to be mad if you're standing around at the end of the week. So
yeah,
don't drag ass, but y'all are doing really good. Y'all can slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
But, man, it's just – it's always work for the most part, but it's always interesting work. You're getting to create a building out of the ground. You're getting to supply the power for that building. You're dealing with temp lights and temp power for all the other trades because everyone on site needs electricity even before it's turned on. You're also – I love the fact that you have to communicate with other trades. You have to know a little bit about their trade. That way y'all can work alongside each other. Like, I need to know where the HVAC guy is putting his units and how big the units are. That way I know what power I'm running to his units. Yeah, the print says it needs number 6, but it's actually only a 30 amp unit. So, like, we can save some money and not put in the number 6 because the original print called for a 50 amp. Man, I hate this timeline of construction where iPads exist, because you have to update the iPad blueprints every morning because, like, we're on revision 73 now. What do you mean you put that in? That's not how it calls for. And you pull up revision 65 and you're like, this is the revision. No, we're on 73. Did you not update your iPad this morning? Like,
I know there's the penetration through that header, but no, data cable and freaking electrical cable cannot go in the same sleeve. That's not a thing. That cannot happen for a variety of reasons on both ends, right? And then both sides do it.
Yep.
Right? You know, it's only one cable. Yeah. It won't work because of the EMI you're blowing into it. It's not shielded, you retard, and it's not supposed to be there anyway. Like, yeah, you're giving me flashbacks to a different time.
Dude, it's I love it. I think it's a rewarding job. And I think if you're someone like, I grew up working on my bike. When I graduated from a bike, I started working on my car. Whenever my buddies needed help doing yard work or something, I was always mowing my yard. Like, if you value working hard, you're going to love doing not just electrical work, but also doing pipe fitting. You're going to love, I guess what I'd say is try it all. Like, don't be scared. Look at me. I was a mechanic. I was a laborer. I was a carpenter. I installed windows and doors. I did plumbing for a little bit.
Yeah.
And now I know a little bit about all of those. And I also know, like, hey, it's time to go to the mechanic shop. Hey, it's time to call the plumber.
Yeah.
And I know without a doubt that I'm doing what I want to be doing. And I think you should probably not join a union at first because there's, like, there's paperwork involved. There's, like, commitment involved. You should probably find a local non-union shop that does – HVAC or pipe fitting or iron work or drywall or painting. Don't be a painter, but if you're going to be a painter, be the best painter. I think that's what I'd say too, is whatever you do, if you're going to do it, show up and do it the best you can. If you're going to be the guy sweeping the floors, take pride in the fact that you get to sweep those floors every day. People will notice that.
I do like the approach of doing some of the work first before you go apply to go long-term with it, to make sure it's something you want to do. I mean, And I don't think that's just a union thing. That's like an anything. Like, I want to be a chef, so I'm going to go to culinary school. Okay, so that's going to cost you more than going to college. For the time you're there, if you break it out per quarter or per year or semester, like, it's going to cost more than going to school for engineering.
Yeah.
Right? So here's a funny thing. When you get out of there, the first job you're going to get, you're going to make about $15 an hour working on a line. Guess what? You can go do that right now. You can go get that, and anybody, like, if you show up and you don't stink and they think you'll show up on time and you go to 4 restaurants, I guarantee 2 of them are going to give you offers for about $15 an hour, which is what you're going to get out of culinary school. And then you can decide, well, why don't you just go do that?
Yeah,
just
whenever,
go do that and see what happens. See where it leads. See where it goes. Because some of the, like, I'm a foodie, so I know some really top chefs, and most of them never went to culinary school, or they're like, that was a fucking waste. Like, that was just a waste of my life. Like, I could have just went in and did this from the beginning. And I only bring that up because it's something I know about. Every space is like that. Everything that is not a sit down in an office type bullshit job, there's some way that you can claw in at the bottom. And the bottom will tell you if you care about being on the top. Because, like you said, there's trades you do, and then you look around and say, well, who is the guy that's doing the best out of all of us? And you look at him and you say, okay, it took him 10 years to get there. So if I do as good as him, at least it'll take me 10 years to get there. And do I want to be that? And when the answer is no, then this isn't the thing for you.
Yeah, you got to start looking. You got to start looking for something else. I'll say whenever I worked at Firestone, there was a guy that went to Lincoln Tech. There was a guy that went to WyO Tech. They probably dropped $15,000 or $20,000 on that trade school. And they made $13 an hour, and I made $12 an hour.
Yep.
Again, no-brainer. If you're going to go waste all that money, go waste it on the Snap-on truck. I'm not endorsing that. I think that's also a bad idea. But if you're going to blow money, you should at least have a tangible product for it.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes tools are a big differentiator, too, in certain trades. Like, and what I found is, like, with a lot of the jobs that have a lot of traveling, there's usually guys that have extra shit, and they'll sell it. Because if you don't buy it from them, they're going to end up so they can go gamble, go sell at the pawn shop. So, like, you can get really good deals that way. Because a lot of the shit, like, in the electrical, it's probably less than telco. A lot of telco stuff is really specialized, like a wire wrap gun. There's, like, 1% of the people on the planet that would even know what it is. And only half of those people still work. And only half of those people need one. Right? And only half of those people are willing to pay, are going to go pay, like, a pawn shop price because they'll just buy a new one. So like it's like 1/10 of 1/10 of 1/10 of 1%, but they're expensive. But when you're new on a job and you're like, well, you need a wire wrap gun. Just does anybody have one that I want to sell? You know, and if that guy's a couple days from payday, he needs money. And then when like so then when you go to your next job and you're like, well, I've got my 1/10 and I've got my 66 punch down tool. I got my wire wrap gun. I got my wire strippers. Like they're like they figure, well, you must know how to use it. Or you wouldn't have it. Like, I know it seems like a cheat code, but it kind of is, you know? And I'm with you on making investments in your future that are tangible. Tools are one of them.
Whenever I first got on as an electrician, they gave me a tool list and said, your first day at work, you got to have all these tools. And one of them was called a BX Armor Cable Cutter. And it's for MC. It's just like a little thing with a little saw blade on it that you rotate and it cuts your MC where it won't mess up the wire.
Okay.
And I remember before I had done any electrical work, like having this tool in my hands and looking at it and it's got like a baby saw blade on it. And I was like, what the hell is this? It ended up being my most used tool. And my first day I was like, hey, can you show me how to use this?
Yeah. 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 Real quick before we go, we had one question. I'm not even going to put it up, but it was basically about like, if you're going to travel, like, how does that work with a relationship? And, like, I think you said it's a young man's game, and it is a special woman that can handle a guy on the road.
And, it is.
You know.
Man, I think it's, like, how good is your relationship? I can't speak to your relationship, but I know a lot of guys that their wives understand that it makes more sense for you to hit the road 6 months out of a year and come home with $110K in the bank and then spend 6 months with the kids.
Yeah.
And like, then I can go work full time and you can be permanent dad for 6 months. It's mileage may vary. I think it's definitely way easier whenever you're single or whenever your wife and kids can travel with you. I know a few people who their wife will get a bartending job at the next town they go to, or the real winning combo. Travel nurse, travel electrician, no kids. Where are we going? If you can find that, you've struck a gold mine.
Or if you have the rare instance where the woman works in the same trade. Like I had a guy that worked, I learned a lot from him. I was young when I was out in New Orleans contracting. And his name was Lowell. I can't remember his wife's name, but they both worked in the telco trade. And so they had the RV. They were on the same jobs. You know, I guess the only thing with that is it, because I've had this experience now for, 15 years of my wife basically being my PA. Like, when you never have time away from each other, that has its own challenges. But to me, that's easier than being apart. I will tell you that when I was in the military, one of the reasons I got out is I wanted a wife. And a wife meant a wife.
Yeah.
And, like, I saw way too – but there's a big difference between being able to, like, travel and maybe come home once or twice during that long thing – and doing it at your own choice and whatever, and being deployed to, like, Korea.
Yeah.
Right? Like, your life's not going. You're going for a year. You're not coming home during that year, and that's just the way it's going to be. And if something goes wrong, you might stay another 6 months, and we'll let you go home for a week, and then you'll be back here. That's hard. That's way harder than what we're talking about here. You know,
I think that's one of the things, too, is, like, you're 100% your own boss when you choose to travel. You're not signing a contract saying I'm going to be on site for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how long I'll travel for? I might get up to Virginia and work for a week and get that $5,000 paycheck and be like, this kind of sucked. I miss my girlfriend. I want to go home. I'm just going to embrace the suck at home. Like, you are still at the end of the day in control of your life. If you try it and you hate it, no one's forcing you to do it. It's just, if you can do it, it's a huge come up. It's like a definite cheat code to get ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, hey, this has been great. You got any final words of advice to the younger folks, like younger than you? Like, they're like, I don't know what I want to do in my life. What's your advice for them?
Work any job they'll give you, like Jack said on Monday, any job they'll give you, you can class three that and you can parlay it into a better job if you just show up and do your job. And when you get stuck with a smart old guy, listen to every word he says and carry a notebook and write it down, because the old guys will teach you every trick in the book. They'll teach you everything they knew, and they have valuable information that you can learn a lot from.
I mean, I'll add to that. Do the old guys want to teach you? They also don't want to waste their time trying to teach somebody they don't want to learn. And when they can tell somebody is actually learning, they get really excited about that, especially as they're getting to, like, when you say old, that means toward the end.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to be leaving at some point soon, and they're not going to be doing this anymore. And knowing that there's a few guys out there that really learn from them that are going to be working another 20 years. Because people that stay in any of these businesses that long, they take pride in what they do or they wouldn't do it.
Absolutely.
You know, that's something I think people don't realize. Dude, this has been a great discussion. I think it's probably got a lot of people thinking about the future differently. And one of the things, like, we had somebody early on kind of saying, like, you know, but if we have all our, you know, talented young men go into the trades, then, like, foreign imported workers are going to take over all the office jobs and all the corporations and all. I think that's nonsense. I really do, because the person that's going to excel in this space could be the person that can kind of multiple personality like me. Like, I did well in one space and the other. I don't think most people are like that. Like, if you really like doing this kind of work, you're not going to enjoy being like a regional sales VP with 37 salespeople working for you, and half of your week is filling out spreadsheets of forecasts that the company's going to kick back to you and raise anyway. Like, you're not going to want to do that.
No, Jack, I don't want to go to an office. I get to work in offices sometimes to do little remodels, add a receptacle here, there. I don't even like working in them. I like working in industrial plants. Like, I was never going to be a guy that went and became a VP of a corporate company or worked at a little cube farm. Like, I don't think by saying young men should get into the trades, you're saying every single young man should. I think it's a sober viewpoint that acknowledges that we've misdirected young people for 30 or 40 or 50 years that college was the only option. And now we're trying to just redirect the people that we always should have said, hey, you would be a great candidate for the trades. Here are all the different trades you can do. Instead of forcing those people to go waste one or two or three or 4 years in college, like I did twice. I did it twice, and I did it because the societal norm at the time was, if you're not going to college, what are you doing? And it took until I was about 21 years old to have enough confidence in myself to say, I'm going to be an electrician. I'm going to work construction, and I'm going to work hard and make a name for myself in this industry. Like, I think people love to say, oh, if we do this, everything's going to burn down. And I disagree.
We have 300 plus million people in this country, and we do not have as much work as we think we do ahead of us to actually, you know, deal with office jobs and email jobs and adult daycare jobs, right? I'm sorry. We just don't. Like, like half that shit's going to be replaced by AI, but it's going to be a long time before an Optimus robot can figure out how to deal with, like, the issues of, like, a penetration in a double header, and it's not where it was supposed to be, and the blueprints are wrong, and the customer's mad, and now I got a change order. I got to get the customer to sign the change order to approve the additional work because it wasn't in the bid because they added it even though they said they didn't. Okay, go get Optimus to do that.
People say they can, like, get a robot to do our job. Oh, everything's off the blueprints. Oh, you don't work construction, because, like, the blueprints are at best a suggestion most of the time.
There's so much that changes on a job site. And then you'll never have cool stories, right, if you're in an office. Like, Here's one of my cool stories from my time. And if you don't have a story like this, you will have something similar, not the same in your future, man. I guarantee you. We got Dallas SWAT called on us. And they kicked the door down and they came in with guns pointed at us. It was kind of fun once they realized who we were and didn't shoot us. We were in a 40-story building, and it's a brand new build, and we cabling kind of comes last.
Yeah.
Right, because it's kind of the last thing that happened. So they were moving people into different stories of these buildings based on different criteria and who paid the most for rent and shit like that. So we're still working when people above us are moved in and doing office work, like doing their email bullshit. And so we're in there one day, and we were putting the suspension system in for the cabling, which is like these things that hang down from the roof. I won't get into. But yeah. You do this with a 25 caliber blank in a gun, yep. And you shoot it into the concrete of the roof, and then it hangs the suspension. And we've got like five dudes shooting suspension at the same time. So it's like, bam, boom, bam, 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 boom, bam, like this going off for like probably 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, dudes in black and shit are coming in with friggin' ARs like over the, like, move, 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 like sending people around. And what happened is the people above us called 911 and said there was an active shooter on the floor below them, because they're sitting there, and not only are they hearing the sound, their ass is vibrating in their chair because we're directly underneath them.
Shooting into their floor.
That had a new policy of the suspension will only be shot after business hours, or at least somebody needs to go upstairs and let everybody know. But it was one of these things where like people are moving in and out, and you don't even know who's where at any point. You just know, hey, I got this job. Here's my friends. I got to get this in. Well, those are not the stories you're going to have if you work as a white collar dude. You know, you're never going to be able to tell your grandkid about how the Dallas SWAT team pointed a gun at you because you were shooting rivets into concrete. Like, that's not going to happen.
That's
fun as long as you don't get shot by the popo.
One other quick thing I do want to say that's absolutely a benefit of working in the trades, even if you might make a little less money, is I have plumbers' cell phone numbers. I have HVAC guys' cell phone numbers. I have drywall and framers' cell phone numbers, and they have my cell phone number. If they need electrical work done, I'm doing it for a six-pack. If I need HVAC work done, they're doing it for a six-pack. Like, there is this community of people that takes care of each other where, like, your money's no good here. I don't want to take your money. I work with you. I just, you have electrical work you need help with, I want to help you. And so I think that's one of those community things you can build and use to save money.
Cool, man. Hey, I appreciate you being with us today. And thanks for hanging out.
Absolutely, Jack. Thank you.
All right, guys, real quick before I go, let me remind you, one of the ways you can help my work and the show's work is by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Super easy to remember. And they have big Prime deals going on right now. And one of my absolute favorite little tools, an EDC tool that I absolutely love, is Streamlight's ProTac Dual Fuel Tac Light. Why is it dual fuel? Well, you know, like the best technology we have for lights like this is a CR123 battery, but it's kind of specialized. You have to actually intentionally buy them, and not a lot of other things use them. However, I bet you in your house, you can look around right now and find five or six different things that use AA batteries. This little light will allow you to use AAs or your CR123s. Now, it's going to be brighter and have more power with the special battery, but if you're out of them and you need to harvest a light, battery from a remote control or a solar light or something like that, you can. And like I said, almost everybody has AA batteries in their home all the time anyway. And if you do what we teach you here, you probably have the end loop rechargeables. So now you have a tactical light that can be super bright, have a little bit more longevity in the battery length and what have you. Or if you just need to get by until you get more batteries, it'll use either or on the battery level. Sometimes you're on the road, you need batteries, you forgot to bring them. Any convenience store, any grocery store has AA batteries all the time. This thing's also cool because of the way the clip's designed. It will actually go onto the brim of a cap, so you can use it like a headlight. Carries really, really well. Nice, small, compact design. I love this light. I used it every night to take and go out to the chicken coop and lock the coop up every night for a while to see, like, if I used it every day, small amounts of time, how long would it last? It lasted about 2.5 months of going out, checking on things, doing stuff like that every night using it at full power with a CR123 in it. So it's a great little light, and it's on sale during the Prime Big Deal, whatever the fuck that means, for 25% off. So it's already a good price at its normal price. Today it's an even better price. Check it out again, the Streamlight ProTac Dual Fuel Tac Light. And I'm going to say, if you're going to get any of these lights like this, including the ones that use like two batteries or whatever, there's a lot of, especially with Streamlight, these lights now that they use like this two-size thing where one sleeves in and one stays on the outside, and that doesn't have to be as long, that will do the dual fuel type thing. Look for that feature even if you're buying something else, because, again, you can just get into situations where specialized batteries are hard to come by, and by being able to use whatever's available, you'll be better off. Also, remember, you can join the member support brigade and get some really great discounts on a ton of stuff. I just used it myself, bought my cover crop seed for winter. I'm cover cropping my gardens right now because it's time to do it. I got a 10% discount on my cover crop seed. I mean, you see where I'm going. Like, you can save money with my membership, get your money back, support the show, no real out-of-pocket cost, and pick up my book, Laws of Life by Jack Spirico. If you like what we talked about today, you'll love that book if you haven't read it yet. Laws of Life, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. I'll catch you tomorrow with that Expert Counsel Q&A show for the week. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, others will follow. Revolution.